Hello, I'm Steve Hatton. This is number 0440, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0440. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Michael Pocock, who is the founder of Book By You, a company that produces personalized books that puts either you or loved ones between the pages.
There's a form that you fill out, and with each book it's a different form. It has roughly 30 different pieces of information that you would personalize. So you know, there's the hero and the heroine. So all the names that would go into the books of the main characters, their features such as hair color, eye color, body and figure type, and then their best friends. And in some of our books you can include your pet, your favorite restaurant. So there's lots of different options. It's roughly about 30 pieces of information, but you end up with a very personalized book that we print.
Voice actor Andre Soljuzzo, who channels his inner Al Pacino for video games.
He was on your show like 10 years ago, man, okay? And he was so stupid. I understand. He was supposed to, you know, give you some Tony Montana. You ask him what kind of good question for you, and he's a cockroach, okay? That's what I'm going to say. He's a cockroach. He didn't do no Tony for you, barely anything. It was embarrassing, man. You know, very, very embarrassing.
Dennis Hoff, owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch brothel in Nevada. They're about to start taking bitcoins.
What we're doing is we're looking at this like we are the cat house for Silicon Valley. All the top Silicon people come to our place, and we can actually watch our business fluctuate by the stock market. But they're insisting on it that we get into the Bitcoin. They're saying, Dennis, Bitcoin is the gold to you baby boomers. The millennials, we want Bitcoin. That's what we use, and we need total anonymity when we come here. We can't let our wives see our credit cards. I don't have cash anymore. We need Bitcoin to keep coming to your place, so we're doing it.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0440 was freelance writer Steve Hatton. You can find him on Instagram, and you'll also find the link to his Instagram page by going to the Stuff File program for this page at thestufffile.com, and this page, of course, is the one that Steve just announced, that 0440. So thank you very much, Steve, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man called police in Goodyear, Arizona, to say that he was sitting on the toilet when his wife, 69-year-old Linda Fawn, came in and shot at him. When officers arrived, the man said his wife had been yelling at him for 2 days and then took the shots at him. Then they asked for her side of the story. "I shot 2 bullets at the wall above his head," Fawn allegedly told officers, "to make him listen to me." She claimed that he would have to be 10 feet tall to be hit by the bullets. Police, however, estimated the shots were about 7 inches above the man's head where he was sitting. Fawn was arrested, charged with aggravated assault. Well, if being shot at is something that would scare stuff out of you, at least he was in the right place at the right time. Meanwhile, an unidentified woman in Port St. Lucie, Florida, says her boyfriend, Richard Anthony Hessick, was very upset when he discovered someone ate the last chocolate chip cookie. She suggested he should review the surveillance cameras to find out who ate it, told him it was too petty to argue about, and offered to buy him some more cookies. I'm assuming that review the surveillance cameras statement, which, by the way, in the stories is in quotes, was her way of sarcasm. In any case, she went to take a shower, but The 31-year-old Hesek, upset she wasn't taking him seriously, followed her into the bathroom. He felt she was blowing him off, so he ripped down the shower curtain, the resulting police report notes, and punched her on the left side of her face. He was arrested and charged with battery. Yeah. I'm sure if he's trying to tell his story to the police, they won't take him seriously either. Nor will the judge or his fellow inmates or anyone hearing this story. Okay, I'm not part of a couple, but from what I gather from the last two stories is that apparently the universal signal of I'm ignoring my mate is to go to the bathroom. That's what I'm drawing from these stories. Anyway, police arrested a Florida motorist who was so impaired that he mistook a Bank of America drive-up lane for a Taco Bell and sought to order a burrito from a teller. Police were called to a Tampa area bank in reference to a suspect who was suspected of being an impaired driver. Upon arriving at the Bank of America branch, an investigator found 28-year-old Douglas Francisco at the wheel of a blue Hyundai in the bank's parking lot. A bank manager previously told police that a male driving a blue Hyundai had passed out at the wheel while in the bank's drive-through lane. After the employee beat on the car's window, the driver awoke and asked for a burrito. He subsequently drove away after being informed that it was not a Taco Bell that he was at. By the way, Taco Bell is not a member of the FDIC, in case you're wondering. Yes. Meanwhile, police in Maine say they have arrested a man who allegedly punched himself in the face to avoid a breathalyzer test. Police say they found the car of 27-year-old Brian Fogg in a ditch early Saturday morning. When they tried to administer a breathalyzer test, Fogg allegedly punched himself in the face three times, causing himself to bleed. Police tended to his injuries instead of giving him the test. Fogg was charged with OUI, or operating under the influence, falsifying physical evidence, and criminal mischief. Well, the police had options, you know. I mean, breathalyzer or blood test, since Brian Fogg, who clearly was in one, was willing to release the supply of his own blood with those punches to his own face. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 26-year-old Prince T. Mitchell is being held for trial, accused of murdering 26-year-old Prince T. Mitchell. Yes, they're twins. The difference in their names is subtle. The alleged murderer's middle name is Terrell, T-E-R-R-I-L-L, and his dead brother is Tyrell, T-I-R-R-E-L-L. The men from Jacksonville, Florida, were arguing, says Lieutenant Craig Waldrop of the Jacksonville PD, and Terrell shot and killed his twin brother. Waldrop declined to specify the subject of the argument. Mitchell had been on the run for about 4 months before he was captured. So, the cops won't divulge to the press what the subject of the argument was. Is it possible, just for a moment, it was an ongoing battle over who had the better name? Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Michael Pocock is the founder of Book By You, a company that produces personalized books that puts either you or your loved ones between the pages of a sweeping saga. These books are ideal gifts for special holiday occasions, such as Valentine's Day, which is less than a month away. Michael has been at this game for almost two decades. As a matter of fact, it was back in 2002 when I first talked to him on my old radio show. So I thought it might be a good idea to talk about his business and how technology has changed it. Michael joins us on the line right now. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Good to be back.
Nice to have
it's
you
been
back
a while.
On the program. Yeah, it's been a while. It's nice to have you back on the program. I still get emails from you. I guess I'm on your mailing list, so I know what your company is doing. And, of course, Valentine's Day is coming up, and I saw the blurb about Book By You for Valentine's Day, so I thought I'd touch base with you and find out how things are going since we last chatted back in 2002, which is now, you know, 16-odd years ago.
Well, we're busy. you know, we're coming up to our 20th year that we've been in business, which really is a milestone. And I think since we last talked, 2002, I'm trying to think of how many books we might have had, but, you know, it wouldn't have been, you know, wouldn't have been that many. We now have over 60 books, personalized novels. So, you know, in terms of sort of where have we gone, we certainly expanded our library significantly. Also, which, I, you know, going back that far, we've launched, so our books are available in paperbacks and hardcovers. We also launched an e-book capability. So you can order an e-book, a personalized e-book, right off, you know, right from our website, and within seconds have it on your computer or your e-reader or on your phone for that matter. And that's been a big change. You know, we still sell more paperbacks and hardcovers, but you know, every month we sell more and more e-books, that's a big difference.
It's interesting because, you know, 20 years ago, of course, or at least back when I spoke to you back in 2002, that wasn't even a viable option, the e-book. It didn't exist yet. Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that you still sell paperbacks and hardcovers, because the thing that's unique about what you're offering is it's a keepsake, it's a memento, and it's something you want in your hands in a hard copy kind of way. For those who don't understand and who may not have been around when we talked 16 years ago, describe to us what Book by You is all about.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Is that we're really a gift and memento type of product, but people visit our website, and we have different genres of books. So, you know, the one that's apropos now is our romance division. So, you know, you pick one of our romance novels. We have vampire books. So there's Vampire Kisses. There's Z Love, which is a zombie romance. We have classics as well as medieval books. So we have lots of different books. So you pick the book that best fits what you're interested in, or for whoever you're buying the book for. And then there's a form that you fill out. And with each book, it's a different form, but it has roughly 30 different pieces of information that you would personalize. So, you know, there's the hero and the heroine. So all the names that would go into the books of the main characters, their features such as hair color, eye color, you know, their body and figure type, and then their best friends. And in some of our books, you can include you know, your pet, your favorite restaurant. So there's lots of different options, but it's roughly about 30 pieces of information. So, it takes a few minutes, you know, to fill in, but you end up with a very personalized book that we print, and it's a paperback or a hardcover, or as I've just talked about, an e-book. And it looks just like a book that you'd purchase at the bookstore or from, you know, or online for that matter, I guess. Except it's better. It stars you or stars your partner. And, you know, with our books, because we're printing in print runs of one, which means there's no two books that are the same because they're personalized, you know, they're a little bit more expensive. So it's not like you know, you're buying a $9.95 book. Our books range from $29.95 up to $39.95. There's some options, you know, just sort of as a side note, there's some options. You can upload a photo that goes on the cover, goes on the back cover, actually, and then we put a little personalized overview of the book underneath that photo, so that when someone receives it, I mean, the first thing generally people do when they open up the package is they look at the cover, and then they flip it over and look at the back, and, you know, the photo is a great, great option. So that makes it a very, very personalized and sort of touching gift. And, you know, obviously with Valentine's just around the corner, it's, you know, the timing's perfect for a Valentine's gift. And we also have kids books and teen books and mystery books and classics. So The Wizard of Oz, Robin Hood, Pride and Prejudice. So we really have something. I think back in 2002, we'd had romance books, and we'd launched our kids' book site. Well, now we have books that will interest everyone in the family, and for all reading levels. So we've really moved ahead quite a bit. I hope I didn't jump ahead too fast there,
no.
But it's yeah.
Well, how much of a lead time does one need for a book? For instance, you know, we're just around the corner from Valentine's, so be it Valentine's Day or someone's birthday or another big occasion, how much lead time do you like to have to make sure that you get the information and they get the book in time for whatever occasion we're talking about?
Yeah, that's a good point. Everything is set up so that we print and ship our books quickly, because thinking again that we're, you know, our books are more of a gift item, you know, it's all about dates. Like, you know, when do you want a book for Valentine's? It better arrive on or before Valentine's. So if we have different shipping options, there's first class mail, priority post, and courier, and there's different costs for that. But you can, if you ordered a book today, we can have it to you within a couple of days. But generally, it takes about a week if you just select the regular shipping option.
And how big has this become since you first started?
It's grown. I don't think we're competing with Amazon right now, but you know, we grow each year and add more books each year. And our customers do come back and order more books, and you see them, they start off with a romance, and then they order, you know, a kid's book, and then a teen book. So our customers come back, and as their kids grow, you can see them buying kids' books and teen books and mystery books, and we're growing, at a nice pace. What's interesting is to see that, you know, the e-book sort of part of things. I know that it's been a tough road for a lot of the conventional publishers, just marketing hardcovers and paperbacks, and the printers are really having a tough time. There's more and more e-books that are being sold out there. So,
how did this all start for you, the idea of doing this in the first place?
Well, it's interesting. I was the officer of a big high-tech company in Canada. It had the fastest moving stock in North America for a time. This is before the internet days. And it was bought out, and all the senior management were tossed. And I found myself on a beach in California with a friend, having a glass of wine, wondering what I was going to do. Just, you know, that very thought. And I thought that it was such a beautiful scenery, and I was with a beautiful person. And boy, you know, life really doesn't get much better. And it made me think of a romance book. And then I thought of all of the interesting things that I've done in my life. You know, I was in international sales for years and years. And I, you know, oddly said, you know, these are things that people do, you know, when they go away on vacations. Like you go away on a vacation, and you meet someone, and you think you fall in love. Well, from there, I thought, if that's, you know, there's a lot of people that have those same types of experiences. Maybe I could take, you know, I was looking at taking old-style romance books and taking the chapters and combining them and launching a personalized, you know, book business. And the more, when I got back from the California trip, I started to do some research. And it, you know, the first one is, can you actually print a personalized book? You got to remember, this is back in 1998. You know, and from there, you know, it looked like there was brand new technology that would allow that to happen, and so that I checked that box off. And I liked to write at the time, and I guess I still do, but now it's more work. And I wrote the first book, and so, you know, that's really how it started. And I can remember the gal that I was with on the beach, she thought I was crazy. We really talked about personalizing a book, and she thought I was crazy. And it was years and years later, you know, she said, well, you know, I helped you to develop that idea. And I said, you didn't.
Well,
but that's really how it started. And, you know, interestingly, and you'll probably get a kick out of this, you know, I started with romance books. And we launched the first book, Love's Next Door, which I wrote. And, you know, and it was very successful. I had an immense amount of press in Canada and then in the U.S. And then people said, well, Mike, you need to move into something like erotica. You know, erotica's, you know, getting bigger and bigger. And you got to remember, again, this is like in like 1999, 2000. You know, and 50 Shades of Grey had not come out. So, you know, and I went, no, I am not going to get into erotica. I'll launch kids' books. And so, you know, we launched our first kid's book, and then people said, Mike, now's the time. I had friends going and business associates saying, now's the time. And I didn't. I launched mystery books.
Well, it seems like you've
and
done...
Then I launched, and then I launched classics. And then, you know, and so it took years and years. And we still don't, you know, it was just last year we launched a book called 50 Shades of You. It's a parody of 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
And that's probably, you know, in terms of erotica, that's the closest we've got. But that was sort of, you think about business decisions as you go through your life, you know, I always laugh at that one because, you know, now the you know, the word erotica doesn't have the same, you know, connotations that it would have had 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Not that we necessarily, you know, thought badly of it, but certainly with recent, you know, success of 50 Shades of Grey, the books and movies and all that, it's changed people's views on erotica, I guess.
Well, you certainly come up with a great idea. I said it was a great idea back when I spoke to you in 2002. It's still a great idea now. It's Book By You. People can find out more information and order Book By You by going to the website, bookbyyou.com. Michael, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Great. Good to be there. Thank you.
Michael Pocock, founder of Book By You. If you would like to order your own personal book from Book By You, you can visit their website at bookbyyou.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0440, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File Program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to voice actor Andre Soliuzzo. Plus, Dennis Hoff is back on the program. He's the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada, and he'll explain why his brothels are now accepting, or will be accepting, Bitcoin. That's all coming up on the program. So also, you'll find an idiot of the day a little later on here on a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio. It depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a man who wanted to avoid paying extra for overweight luggage decided to wear all of his clothes. However, this move backfired when the man was not allowed to board a British Airways flight and was arrested when he questioned staff members and recorded the encounter. Ryan Carney Williams said that he was traveling from Iceland to his home in London, England. He was at the Keflavik International Airport dressed in 8 pairs of pants and 10 shirts. He was allowed to check in his luggage, but he was soon told that he was not allowed to fly due to the excessive amounts of clothes. Ryan posted videos of the incident to Twitter. He slammed the airline for racial profiling. I guess bothering people who are wearing too many clothes is racist. Anyway, airline employees asked him to stop recording before calling security. Williams was arrested after being rude to staff members. Williams said that he was polite during the incident. After giving police his side of the story, Williams was allowed to walk free. The airline refunded his money for the ticket. By the way, the next day, another airline refused to allow him to board because of what happened the day before. They, too, refunded his ticket. Williams finally made it home on a Norwegian airline. There is no word as to how much he was wearing at the time of that flight. You know, there are some people who just shouldn't leave their homes. I mean, seriously, chances are if you act like an idiot, someone will treat you like an idiot. Yeah. In Parkland, Washington, state troopers and Pierce County sheriff's officers responded to a call on November 25th about a man who had stopped his SUV in the middle of an intersection and was waving around an AK-47 and screaming about lizard people. The 54-year-old Eatonville man obeyed when officers ordered him to lie down on the ground but resisted being handcuffed until officers tased him. He told them he had snorted methamphetamine to lose weight and that President Donald Trump had called his home to warn him that lizard people were coming and his family members were already being held hostage by the Alpha Dragon. The lizard people are real, he told police, explaining that he wanted to attract attention so that his story could be documented for history. Oh, gee, did he ever think on tweeting to the president about it? I hear he's familiar with that platform. 26-year-old Ariel Bonici of Huntington, New York, responsibly arrived at the Newport Police Department and Village Justice Court on December 4th to answer a summons issued in May for possession of marijuana. But before she could even park her car, Bonici, who was on her phone, attracted the attention of officers by cutting off an unmarked police vehicle and wheeling into a spot reserved for the chief of police. When officers approached the car and Bonici rolled down her window, a cloud of marijuana smoke poured out, and she was promptly arrested for possession again, along with getting a ticket for using her cell phone while driving. She was able to kill two birds with one stone and appeared before the court for all of her charges. Do you get the feeling that she really hasn't learned anything, and she'll probably be back in front of a judge sometime in the near future? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a man in Turkey who wanted to celebrate his birthday at a castle fell to his death while trying to take the perfect selfie. 39-year-old Halil Dag, who is the father of 8 children, lost his life by falling more than 100 feet from the edge of a cliff onto the rocks below. The incident unfolded while Dag and his friends went to visit historical sites. While Dag was at the Urfa Castle, which lies at the top of a mountain, his friends took video of him jumping from some rocks. Dag wanted his friends to capture a photo showing him suspended in midair at the castle. When he landed on the ground, he lost his balance and rolled over the edge of a cliff. He fell 120 feet and died as a result of severe trauma. You know, this is just the latest example of the new growing and deadly trend in fatal picture taking that we like to call a photo finish. Yes, the Darwin file, because the tree of life is often self-pruning. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Back in 2006, on my old radio show, we talked to actor Andre Soliuzzo. At the time, he was getting ready to channel his inner Al Pacino to voice the role of Tony Montana in the video game Scarface, The World Is Yours. Well, Andre has recently revived the character for the Payday 2 first-person shooter game, so I thought it might be a good time to catch up with Andre to talk about his very busy and successful career. He joins us on the line via Skype from California. Hi, Andre.
How you doing, man? Look, Andre's not here yet. I gotta say something to you right now, okay? Mira, he was on your show like 10 years ago, man, okay? And he was so stupid, I understand. He was supposed to, you know, give you some Tony Montana. You ask him what kind of good question for you, and he's a cockroach, okay? That's what I'm going to say. He's a cockroach. He didn't do no Tony for you, barely anything. It was embarrassing, man. You know, very, very embarrassing. Okay, that's what I got to say to you, because, look, hey, all I got in this world is my boss and my word, okay? And I don't break from right. Do you understand? I never liked him. I never trusted him. But he's here today. He's going to talk to you now. I strain him out for you, okay, man? So I'm going to say goodnight to the bad guy, okay?
Good night, Tony.
You come over here now, Andre, because I strained you out for Peter, okay? Okay, mira. How you doing, man?
Hi, Andre. How you doing, sir? Good to be on the phone. Yes. Good. We have revived Tony for Payday 2. It is out. It's been out a little while now, and it was exciting to be able to revive the character, because originally they had sequels planned, and they were going to do a couple of more video games, and who knows, with any luck, that may still happen. But at the time, there was a whole split up with Universal and Vivendi and all kinds of politics, and, you know, games that are on the docket get shelved and go away. And so Payday was a wonderful opportunity for them to... The Payday guys talked with the producer, Pete Wanat, at Universal about, you know, reviving Tony and putting him into the Payday universe. So it was a nice way for them to kind of test the waters again and bring Tony. Kind of, it's not really his milieu, the sort of bank robbery Payday 2, but it has a wonderful fan base and a very popular game. So we very quickly did this massive, rapid two-day session. And they kind of crammed Tony into some other world that wasn't his own. So it isn't optimum Tony Montana's universe, but it was still wonderful, at least, to get him back out there.
Now, it's been, as you mentioned, about a decade since we last spoke. It's been about a decade since you did the character for the original video game that we were talking about way back then. Was it like riding a bicycle for you? Was it easy to get back into the swing of things with a character?
You know, I can't stop, you know. When I'm in traffic or somebody cuts me off, you got so many good Tony lines, you know. So it's, for me, it's like, you know, second nature for me. Once you have done over, like, you know, more than 5,000 lines as Tony in your head, forget about it, you know. So, right away I went right back at it. You know, the key to Tony, though, also is oftentimes is having, as I said, I really enjoyed doing it. It wasn't necessarily the optimal Tony, because they were sort of utilizing the format of their game for Tony's character, and you're sort of cramming him in. So it was a little tricky sometimes trying to get the feeling of the character using somebody else's world, but we did, you know, and it was done kind of in a quick hurry, but it came out all right. And it wasn't hard to revive the character. It was a lot of fun.
Now, recently on this program, over the last little while, I've had the opportunity to talk to Bob Bergen, who's the voice of Porky Pig.
Sure, I know Bob.
And many other characters. And also an opportunity to talk to Rich Little. And the reason why I bring up those two names is because you do something that both of them do. In the case of Rich Little, he has had the opportunity to do looping or replacing voices for actors who either can't do the looping, or in the case of literally what Rich Little has done, in the case of people who have died, he has done looping for. And you've also done a fair amount of animation, which is something that Bob is known for.
Yeah.
Do you find those are, even though it's all voice work, do you find that it's like an athlete exercising a different sort of muscle or a different part of their brain to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a different skill set. I mean, it depends. Sometimes you're in animation, you're creating a character completely out of your mind, out of your own head, and you're creating a completely original character, I guess is the word I'm looking for. In the case of when you're doing looping, or ADR as they say, that's a very, very specific set of skills, and even a lot of good impressionists, so to speak, can't necessarily do it, because there's something that's like an impression, which is sort of a more broad caricature, and then there's actually sounding exactly like the person mid-sentence, and that's what you do on a film. You know, I've looped for Russell Crowe, Jack Nicholson, Clint Eastwood, many people, Clooney, and you come in and, you know, sometimes they've started the sentence and they need to put a puzzle piece of it in the middle, and then maybe Russell Crowe's going to finish that sentence. So, you know, you not only have to sound like him, but you also have to act like him. You have to, you know, it's a musical kind of timing. So it's more than just creating a voice. You have to have complete rhythm to drop that in mid-sentence and inflect your voice exactly the right way so that nobody notices it. As we said 10 years ago, if I've done my job correctly, you never knew I was there. This is what I often say about what I do. You know, if you're if,
If you're brilliant, you're invisible.
Interesting story, if I'm not mistaken. I believe you actually had the opportunity, because you mentioned Clint Eastwood's name. If I'm not mistaken, did you not actually loop one of his older films, one of his spaghetti westerns? And, of course,
yes,
that's when he was a younger man.
I cleaned up Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Wow.
They shot those movies without sound back in the day in Spain, and then they just dubbed Italian over everybody. Now, when it came to America, of course, they were American actors, so Clint and Eli Wallach and Lee Van Cleve and all those guys dubbed their performances, but the Americans chopped theirs to like a clean 2 hours. Well, as we know, Sergio Leone likes to take his time, and of course, once those movies 30 years later were considered masterpieces, they said, well, let's reconstruct the masterpiece and put back in the deleted scenes. Well, nobody had bothered to loop those deleted scenes into English. Some of those guys had died. A lot of them were old. And, you know, Clint Eastwood sounds like this now when he talks. He's a lot older. You know, you whisper for 30 years, you scratch up your voice. So he's got that weather to him. He was 36 when he did that film. So I was brought in to kind of match. He did cooperate with the restoration. There is Clint in that, in the restoration, but certain sections it's me, Clint, me. But yeah, I had to sort of split the difference between the 36-year-old original Clint and some of the work that Clint did as an older man. But some of it was just, you know, not gonna make. It would have been too noticeable a difference because of his age, understandably so.
So how do you go about this? Does your agent call you? Does the casting call you and they say, we need you to do a 36-year-old Clint Eastwood? Not the current Clint Eastwood,
but
an earlier
Clint Eastwood. They said, we need you to sound like Clint Eastwood, and sometimes they send a sample. You know, I mean, I'm trying to remember what that was, but I'm pretty sure I had to audition all of it. You know, no one just says, oh, yeah, bring Andre. He can. They always want to hear proof. So you always have to audition, you know. I mean, usually they go, get Andre, I'm sure he can do it. But the studio is still going to want to hear my version of it before they sign off on it. So, yeah, I believe I had to do an audition and convince them that I could sound just like Clint Eastwood in Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And I booked the gig, and in you go that day, and here you are, you know.
With all the things that you do, what's the thing? Because you do voice work, you do on camera, you're an actor. What's the thing that gives you the most joy?
It all does. I mean, I love doing on-camera work. I love creating. I'm very well known as a voice match guy and doing impressions. I love creating characters of my own. I sort of love doing everything. Each one is a little different. I mean, I'm not one of those actors that would trash voice work per se versus on camera or whatever, because each one is different. In animation and in video games, I'm going to be allowed to play characters that I never could in real life. No one is ever going to cast me as a 100-year-old Chinese wizard, you know. Not anymore. That would have been done 80 years ago in film, but you don't do that now. You cast a real old Chinese man. But in video games, because they need us to do many characters in a limited period of time, they can't always do that kind of casting. So I might play the old Chinese wizard, a Russian mobster, a German scientist, all in the same afternoon. So in that, it's a wonderful amount of flexibility I get to do. I love performing in theater too. I also do a lot of radio dramas with a group called LA Theater Works, and I've done stuff for the BBC, a lot of Shakespeare plays. So I get to do a little bit of everything all the time. It's wonderful. I'm sort of someone different every day. Even if I'm not being paid, I'm auditioning. So I can't say I prefer one over the other, but it's nice to walk and talk and be seen for what you do rather than being anonymous.
Speaking about being seen, I was just about to ask, you're so busy, but you can be anonymous. People don't know what you look like. Do you enjoy the anonymity, or would you prefer to have your face on a big billboard somewhere?
No, I'd much prefer being known only if... It's nice to be known for what you do, but also in the monetary world of Hollywood, as soon as you're a well-known face, your price goes up. You know, you're able to demand more money, and you're able to book stuff off of your celebrity. Unfortunately, we live in a celebrity world. So the better known you are, the easier, in a lot of ways, it's not that I want to be famous for fame's sake, because that's not really all that important to me, but I would like to be at least moderately well-known enough that I could command more money for the work I do in all the other stuff that I do all the time anyway. You know, that's just kind of the way the game is played. There's a wonderful opportunity I had, a film that's now on Netflix called Being George Clooney, where they interviewed me about the looping work I do. And it's a film where they went all over the world and they talked to all the guys that dubbed George Clooney around the world. They went to Turkey, France, Germany, and they talked to me because I did George Clooney's voice for American Dad. So they wanted me to talk in terms of an animation perspective. Well, when they had me in the interview, they suddenly found out, well, wow, you actually loop him in films, you know, and movie trailers or whatever. The filmmaker at the time didn't really know that. He was doing a movie about guys that just did foreign language dubbing. And so I sort of just off the top of my head went into sort of the concept of being George Clooney in George Clooney's voice. And very graciously or wonderfully, they use me to open the film. So the film opens in black, and you just hear George Clooney's voice talking to you. And then suddenly, mid-sentence, they cut to my face as George Clooney. So for me, it was a wonderful moment to claim the spotlight. You know, it's like, yes, you're hearing Clooney, but guess what? It's this guy. And that was a really wonderful thing. They ended up not using any of the stuff about animation, but they did talk to me about my work and the nature of dubbing and what it was like. I lived in Italy as a kid, and so they asked me about, you know, sort of my experience watching Italians, because Italians are huge on dubbing. But it's a really fun film, being George Clooney. It's on Netflix now, and you'll enjoy that. Anyone who likes voice work, it's a wonderful tribute to the guys, the unknown voices.
Well, we'll check that out. Andre, it's a pleasure to have you on the program again. Thank you very much for chatting with us.
Sure. Let me give you a couple things to keep your eyes out for. There's a documentary coming out called Who Will Write Our History. I'm going to be in that. Another thing that I think is on Netflix, Untold History of the United States, where I work with Oliver Stone doing over 20 voices for him, all historical voices. You can always see me on Eleanor of Avalor. I'm on Castlevania. The game Mafia 3 that's out right now, I'm pretty prominent in towards the end of that game. So I'm always keeping busy and doing other stuff. But I love talking with you, Peter, because you are a true fan of what it is me and Bob and others do, and we really appreciate it.
Thanks, Andre.
Thanks, Peter. Good talking with you.
The very busy voice actor, Andre Soliuzzo. As you just heard him say, he has a lot of projects you can find him in, such as the documentary Who Will Write Our History? Untold Stories of the United States on Netflix, and the game Mafia 3, just to name a few. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0440, and you'll find links to Andre's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Imagine your doctor has just told you that you have a fatal disease and you have only months to live. There are no treatments approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration, but there is a new therapy that could save your life. Unfortunately, the FDA's rigid clinical testing requirements means it'll be a decade or more before the new drug is available to you. Every year, thousands of people find themselves in this terrible situation. They're willing to try experimental treatments, but the FDA's red tape prevents them from doing so. To address this problem, 31 states have enacted laws called Right to Try that let terminally ill patients try promising treatments that have passed the first phase of the FDA's clinical tests. Let's be fair, that's a good start, but terminally ill patients need federal action. Vice President Pence signed a Right to Try law as governor of Indiana, and now the White House says it's time for Congress to act too. For thousands of patients, it can't happen soon enough. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day and a few more Stuff File news stories to hear on a program, the Stuff File program, with me, Peter Anthony Holder, author of the book Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon, and the ever-popular So Much More. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com, so buy the book. What are you waiting for? Well, an ambulance crew in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, had just dropped off a patient at a hospital and were cleaning up the back when one of the medics noticed someone had jumped into the driver's seat. They leapt out of the back just as the ambujacker sped away with their rig, crashing into two trucks as he left the parking lot, running through various stop signs along the way. The thief had a destination in mind, a pharmacy in nearby Danville, where he crashed into a barrier pole, went inside, hopped over the counter, and demanded the pharmacist provide him with some oxys as he rifled through packaged prescriptions trying to find something he'd like. An off-duty federal prison guard happened to be a witness of the antics and tackled the man and held him for police. 29-year-old Adam R. Zaharik admitted to officers that he wanted to put on a show by stealing the ambulance, which was destroyed in the wreck. It's amazing how many people demand pain pills when they're the ones actually causing the pain. Meanwhile, Teller County, Colorado Sheriff Jason Mikesell listed his SUV for sale on Craigslist in November, and he was in a little perplexed mood when he received a response from 39-year-old Sean Langley of Vail offering to trade the SUV for 4 pounds of marijuana. Langley even provided photos of his black market booty and boasted about its quality. "I saw that text and started giggling," Mikesell said. Detectives set up a meeting and arrested both Langley and 41-year-old Jane Crevins. After finding the promised 4 pounds of marijuana in their car, Sheriff Mikesell has removed his SUV from Craigslist. Well, I guess that deal has gone up in smoke. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 27-year-old British model Chloe Hammond, also known as Chloe Rebel, succumbed to a fit of road rage on March 19th, that was almost a year ago, when 56-year-old Julie Holloway tapped on her car window and asked her to stop using her phone while driving in traffic in London. Hammond responded by parking her Audi TT and then came out of nowhere toward Holloway, kicking her in the stomach, grabbing Holloway's hair, and biting off a piece of her ear. Holloway, bloodied and disturbed, didn't realize part of her ear was missing until someone picked it up off the floor. Well, flash forward to October, Hammond was convicted of causing grievous bodily harm with intent in Southwark Crown Court, and Just about a month and a half ago, on December 18th, a judge sentenced her to 5 years in jail. Wow, that must have been a very, very important phone call. Meanwhile, everyone's probably asking Julie, "Can you hear me now?" Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Dennis Hoff is back on the program again. By now, you know he is the owner of many brothels in Nevada, including the famed Moonlight Bunny Ranch and the Love Ranch, both near Carson City. Dennis always seems to find a way to get his establishments into the news. The latest story is one where his brothels are exploring the idea of accepting Bitcoin as payment. Dennis is on the line right now from Nevada to talk about this. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, good afternoon. You know, they're dragging me into the new century. You know, what we're doing is we're looking at this like we are the cat house for Silicon Valley. All the top Silicon people come to our place, and we can actually watch our business fluctuate by the stock market and what their stocks are selling for, because they, of course, got more money when the stocks are up. But they're insisting on it that we get into the Bitcoin. They're saying, "Dennis, Bitcoin is the gold to you baby boomers. The millennials, we want Bitcoin. That's what we use, and we need total anonymity when we come here. We can't let our wives see our credit cards. I don't have cash anymore. We need Bitcoin to keep coming to your place." So we're doing it.
Okay, I said in the introduction that you were exploring the idea of accepting Bitcoin. So is this now a done deal? Is this something you will definitely be doing?
we're going to be doing it, but we are doing the exploration now because we're working with our legal team, we're working with our tax people, different ramifications. We're trying to understand the volatility of it, how that would change, how we get our money, utilize the money that we take in, because the girls take half the money. So if you come in and spend $500, actually you'd only spend $250 because I give you the radio host discount. But if you spend $500, then and we take it in Bitcoin, then how are we going to turn this into cash, or how are we going to utilize it to pay our bills? And we're also going to the county to make sure that the county is okay with this. But, you know, technology is changing, and so is the old cat house. This ain't your daddy's old cat house. I mean, we're working with three, you know, reputable sex robot people, and we're thinking within 6 months we'll have the sex Bunny Ranch sex robots.
Wow, technology moves on. Okay, so if you're thinking about taking Bitcoin and saying it's the wave of the future, you described when you first came on the program that you say, you know, people like a certain amount of anonymity when they come to your establishment. So before using Bitcoin, how were people, or even now, how are people paying to use the facilities at your establishments?
Well, right now, it's you can use all major credit cards. You can use debit card, and you can use cash, or you can write us a check. So those are the standard ways. The anonymity is that we don't keep any records on any credit card sales, so nobody can ever hack it like Ashley Madison and these companies that had all these problems. So we run the card, but it never goes into our computer system at all. So that helps our security base. But we knock on wood, we've never had an incident, and I hope we never do.
Now, I always marvel at the fact, I was watching, I guess, Late Night with Seth Meyers, and this story came up in the news. The fact that it's in the news, I immediately Googled your name and Bitcoin and saw the story everywhere. I got to admit, Dennis, you've always found a way to keep the Moonlight Bunny Ranch and the other establishments that you have in the news. Congratulations and kudos on the PR job that you always do.
Well, and I talked to Joy Behar and Whoopi Goldberg and Meghan McCain today. They talked about me on The View also. But this wasn't designed as a media hype, if you will, but it's a darn good one, I got to say. But our Silicon Valley guys, these top guys in Silicon Valley are just demanding it. So we meet the demand for everything they need. And someday you'll be able to come in and use your Bitcoin coin to get your sex robot bunny, and you're not cheating on your wife or nothing.
Now, some banks are still a little weary about the idea of even accepting or dealing with Bitcoin. So from your perspective, from a businessman's perspective, you're willing to accept Bitcoin, but does that become problematic for you, as you just described earlier, you know, in paying the girls, in keeping accounts as to where your money is going, to pay your own bills, considering you're taking in or planning to take in Bitcoin?
Absolutely. I think the problem is this. The girl books the 500. The next day, she expects the 250. And we're going to take the Bitcoin for ourselves, just like we would a check or cash, and we have to worry about the volatility of it, because this thing goes up and down like a yo-yo. So that's my concern, and how we can hedge that risk. Now, there's also the upside, too, is that when it goes down, it also goes back up. So it's going to be a juggling act, and we're going to have to stay right on top of it, but that's okay.
Wow, there were so many double entendres in there, and what you just said, I'm not going to touch. I'm not going to touch any of them.
Not intentional, Peter. Not intentional. But you know, you Canadians, I think you just think a little bit dirty, and that's what I like about you.
Well, Dennis, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program to talk to you, especially when there's new technologies or new stories. I mean, there's always something going on, literally, at the Moonlight Bunny Ranch and the Love Ranch, and that's just two of seven properties you own. And I didn't mention it in the intro, but I guess we have to, for those who aren't aware of the fact, when I mention your brothels, we're talking about brothels where prostitution is completely legal, correct?
well, completely legal. It's the only place in North America where brothels are completely legal, and it's not legal in Las Vegas. So don't get tricked by those billboard trucks that says we can have a girl to you faster than Domino's can get a pizza to you, because it's all illegal prostitution, and the police, the FBI, the Internal Revenue, everybody is focusing on shutting it down.
Well, Dennis, always a pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you once again for chatting with us.
My pleasure. Peter, email me, dennis@bunnyranch.com. I want to make sure I got your current info.
Honestly, I never knew there was a broadcaster discount. Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch and the Love Ranch, to name just two of his brothels that he runs in Nevada. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0440, and you'll find links to Dennis's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Sergeant Michael Davis, a police officer assigned to the Brunswick, Glynn County, Florida Narcotics Enforcement Team, started getting threatening calls on his personal cell phone. Davis told the caller he almost certainly had the wrong number, but the calls persisted, so Davis told the caller he was a cop and to stop calling. The man said he didn't think Davis was a cop and should arm himself. Davis switched to a video call with the man and showed him his badge and that he indeed was armed. The caller quickly hung up and blocked Davis from calling him back. By then, Davis had identified the caller as a man who had recently reported he had been robbed at his home on St. Simon's Island of cash and a large amount of marijuana. Davis got an arrest warrant for 18-year-old Clayton Roland Cowman Jr., who told investigators he thought he was calling the man who had robbed him. Cowman is charged with making terrorist threats against a peace officer, using a communication device to facilitate a felony involving drugs, and making harassing communications. Now, why, oh why, would you repeatedly call someone on the phone who claims to be a police officer, threatening him with bodily harm because you mistakenly believed he stole your weed? And while we're on the topic, to begin with, why would you have earlier knowingly called the cops to report that you had a large amount of marijuana stolen in the first place? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0440. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0440. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.